On Yudalit Omid Aleph, Omar Shmuel, about 10 lines down from the top, my Tamayu Durabonon. We know that according to the Chachamim, Shmuel says that even if a Shtar Milva does not have Shibu Nechasim written in the Shtar, it's been omitted. Nevertheless, despite that omission, the Malva could collect from the Lekuchos. And they have, the Malva has rights to do so by virtue of the Shibud that's in the Shtar, even though the Shtar has no Achrayus written in it. So what's the reason for that? Savri Achrayus to Sofer. The fact that the Shtar has no Achrayus written in it, the Shibud is left out, that's not because the Malva is willing to extend the loan even without a Shibud, but on the contrary, it's a toz sofer. It's a mistake. It's an oversight on the part of the scribe who wrote the shtar. But for sure, we don't have to even question the assumption that this halva was extended on the condition that the nechasim of the lova would be meshubadim for the purpose of repaying the loan. Every person who extends a loan, every malva, needs security. He's not going to just throw his moment to the wind, so to speak, his money to the wind. He wants to know that he has a recourse, he has what's called arvus, some sort of security, that's going to guarantee that the loan will be repaid. So there's no question in our minds that the malva certainly wants the shiva to be chal, and almanas kain, on that condition, he extends the loan, he agrees to give the loan. There's no ritzu, there's no agreement on the part of the malva to extend this loan without the nechasim of the lova standing as a shibud, as a lien, as a protection, as a security, which we call arvus, for the loan. And therefore, we can always assume that both the malva and the lova, through the shtar, agreed to create a shibud. And the absence of a shibud, the omission of a shibud, is nothing more than an oversight on the part of the scribe, of the sofer. Which means that there's no need for the edim who wrote the shtar and signed the shtar to ask the malva, to ask the lova, if there's an agreement for shibud. That's called lihimalech. There's no need lihimalech. Now, the same discussion and the same issue is going to arise with regard to a different kind of a shtar, and that's a shtar mecher. When a person sells property to the kone, the lokeach wants to know that there is security. Why is that so important to the lokeach? Because in case the malva has extensive loans, outstanding loans that haven't been repaid yet, that karka, which is now being purchased by the lokeach from the mocher, assuming the mocher was a lova and he was a balchov, is now vulnerable, is now leaned for any outstanding loans of the mocher. So the lokeach therefore wants to know that the mocher accepts upon himself achrayus. And even if the shtar mecher has no mention of achrayus in it, that omission is nothing more than, as we said before, a mistake on the part of the scribe. And that's going to lead the Gemara to the next question, to a lechora stira between one statement of Shmuel and another. Amalei Rav bar Iti, Rav Iti bar Rav, and Umi Amar Shmuel Hachi. Is it possible that Shmuel maintains the position that achrayus told so far? Ve'ha'amar Shmuel, we have another statement of Shmuel that indicates the exact opposite. Shevach, Shefer, v'shibud, Tzarech limolech. There are three questions that have to be clarified in the case of a shtar mecher, meaning the sofer and the edim have to make sure when the shtar is written up that they've asked three questions of the mocher, of the seller. Number one, is he willing to be meshabed his nechasim for the sake of this sale? Meaning, is he willing to accept upon himself to be machne to the lokeach, to his buyer, a lien on his property, such that if he owes money and his balchov, his malva, comes along and he takes, he rips and confiscates the karka out of the possession of the lokeach, the lokeach can come back to the mocher and collect the keren and the shevach. Shemashbiach ba lifnei gvias balchov. Let's say, for example, the lokeach buys the karka at 1,000, and the karka went up in value. As a result, at the point in which the balchov, the mocher, takes, confiscates the karka is now worth 1,500, not just 1,000. And the lokeach wants to guarantee that in the context, in the framework of this sale, he'll be able to be reimbursed by the mocher at 1,500. The value, the higher appreciated value of the karka at the time of the gvias balchov. That's question number one. Question number two that has to be asked is, what kind of a payment is the mocher guaranteeing as security that in event that the karka is taken out of the hands of the lokeach by his balchov, the mocher will be mafatza him, he will pay him. And that's the question called Shefer. Shefer means the best of the best, the idius Shebenechosov. And therefore, if, for example, the Mocher doesn't agree to commission the Sofer to write up this Shibud in the Shtar, some Mocherim decide they don't want to take upon themselves this Achrayus at all. And if the lokeach is out because the karka is confiscated by the bachov, that's it. That's the lokeach's problem. Some mochrim will be agreeable to accept upon themselves a shibud nechasim to pay for the keren, for the 1,000 that the karka was sold for, but they don't want to go beyond that. They don't want to be mishabi themselves to pay the increase in the value, the market value of the karka. Some will be agreeable to be mishabi the keren to pay the 1,000 and even to pay the extra 500, the increase of the value, but they're not willing to accept upon themselves a chiyuv to pay from the best of the best, from the idis, what's called the shefer of their nechosim. What they'll pay from is what we call beninus. We know that all karka is divided into three categories, three classifications. There's Beninus, Ibis, and Ziburis. And the Mocher is willing to take upon himself the Achrayus to pay with Beninus, but not with Ibis. So there are three questions which the Sofer has to clarify with the Mocher, how far he's willing to agree to back up this Mecher, to secure the Mecher on behalf of the Lokeach, and to commit himself with his Chayvus to reimburse the lokeach, and not only for the keren, but possibly even for the shevach, and to pay with shefer. Now, we gave the example that the lokeach might be in a precarious situation just in case the balchov of the mocher comes to confiscate the karka, but we have to keep in mind that there are other scenarios. The lokeach assumes that the mocher is the rightful owner of this karka, and it's clear for sale, but it is possible that this karka was stolen at some point, and the nigzal might come and claim this karka from the lokeach. Here too, the mocher has to back up the chov. However, Tosus Divrei Maaseil Shibud, he claims that if the collection from, or the confiscation of the karka from the lokeach is a result of the nigzal who comes to get his rightful, to claim his rightful ownership of the karka, then if Bezdin clarifies with evidence that this karka did not belong to the mocher and he had no legal ownership rights to sell it, then the shtar itself, the sale, the bill of sale, is completely worthless, and therefore the lokeach could come back and demand his payment, even if there was no shibud written in the shtar. the obligation, the responsibility on the shoulders of the mocher to back up this mechira and to pass and to return the money to the lokeach in event that it's taken by the gazlan is not a result of a shtar mecher in this case and a kabbalas eschayvus on the part of the mocher. It's basically a halva. And in the case of Alvo, we're going to see, as the Gemara develops it here, that Shmuel holds Achrayis Tos Sofer. Perhaps one could even argue that the basic right of the mocher, of the lokeach, to take his money back from the mocher, is guaranteed even without the shtar. And therefore, we're not talking about a case of Gvias Balcho, we're talking about a case of Gvias Balcho from the Lokeach, but not a case of Gvias Anigzal from the Balcho. So Ayin Shom, take a look at this Tosfos. And now we'll go Vaita in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Lema man di omar ha lo omar ha. The Gemara questions that perhaps we have to assume that the original statement of Shmuel of Achrayis Tos Sofer was not really made by Shmuel, it was an Amora quoting Shmuel. Here, we have also a quote in the name of Shmuel, Tzorach Limolech, that's another Amora in the name of Shmuel, and these are two traditions as to what Shmuel actually said. And the Gemara is not happy about that, because to the best of our knowledge, Shmuel made these two statements. There should be some logical possibility of reconciling these two statements. These were not statements or different various versions of what Shmuel actually said, and this one said he said this one said he said that. No. So the Gemara answers Lo Kasha, Kan B'Shtari Halva, and I'm skipping Kan B'Mekachu Memka. Meaning, at this point, the Gemara is making the fundamental distinction with regard to whether it's Tos Sofer, whether it's Tzorach Limolech, between two separate categories of shtaros. When did Shmuel say that Achrayis Tos Sofer, that's only in a shtar alva? There we have a pressing svara, to lo yav inish zuzi b'chdi, which means that the malva would never ever agree to give such a sum of money and just throw it to the wind, so to speak. He wants to know, he wants to guarantee that there's a shiva in the Nichse Alova to make sure that there will be a payment of his loan. And even if the shtar doesn't indicate that, there's no doubt about it. That premise is absolutely certain, and Achrayis Tos Sofer. But here, when Shmuel says that the sofer has to ask for an agreement and a commitment on the part of the mocher, that's in the shtar mecher. Why is that different? The oven inish the zovin aroliome. When a person buys karka, because again, just like the malve is in a precarious situation vis-a-vis his mos, in the case of alva, the lokeach is in a precarious situation. He's vulnerable in the case of a mecher. So let's get into the mindset of the lokeach. Does he absolutely need, as a prerequisite for this mechira, that the mechira be backed up by a shibud? It's very possible that a person buys a piece of karka knowing that there's an element of doubt as to whether this mechira would be a long-term sale, or perhaps it'll be curtailed, it'll be limited in time, and after even a day perhaps, the Gemara's dramatic here, liyome, even after a day, 24 hours go by, and the mechira terminates, the karka is confiscated, ripped out of the hands of the lokeach. And the reason for this is because the lokeach takes a risk. He realizes that, you know, he may hit the jackpot. If he gets lucky, the sale will be liolam vaed. If he doesn't get so lucky, then the land will be confiscated. And Almanas Kane, understanding that das, that there's a wild card here, that there's an element of risk in every mechira, you know, it'll take a long time till he knows. And you know what? Even if there's a balchov out there, you know, that's about to pounce upon the karka, who knows how long it's going to take until that happens? You know, first the balchov will have to establish in court that he has a claim, that there's an outstanding loan that was not repaid. And maybe the loan itself is a 10-year loan. Who knows? So he's not the lokech here, if we get into his mindset, it's not throwing his money to the wind. It's not as if there's no purpose here. And he's done a bad deal and his money is vulnerable. No, he takes those chances. And therefore, Shmuel says that the sofer has to first get permission and an explicit statement agreement on the part of the mocher. Does he want to be mechshavet his nechasov, his properties, to the lokeh to back up this sale? And if yes, what kind of shibud? How far is he willing to go? And now the Gemara brings a proof that Shmuel himself made this distinction between shtari milv and shtari mecher. Why? Ki ahi, there was a case, the avur de bar ihi zovin alisa me'achsei. He purchased, avur bar I purchased karka from a very, ilasa means a very fine, outstanding piece of property, real estate, from his sister, Asa Balchov, and his sister had owed some debt, and the debtor came, the creditor came and took away, Vitar Fmine took away the karka from Avua Bar Ihi, and apparently there was a shibud, and that allowed the Balchov of Achte to come along and take the karka from Avua Bar Ihi. Also, Lekami Demar Shmuel. Avua Bar I comes in front of the Dayan Shmuel. Shmuel's the Dayan in this case, to demand that the payment that he, with which he bought the karka from his sister, be reimbursed to him. And then Shmuel says, "Well, let's look at the shtar mecher. You're the lokech, you're the buyer. Where's your shtar? Amalei." So Shmuel says, "Let's see. Kosvalach achrayus. In the shtar, is there achrayus that allows you as a lokech to go back to her, your sister, as a mocheres, and collect and be reimbursed for the money you paid?" Omalei, lo, there's no shtar written in, there's no achrayus written in the shtar. Omalei, so Shmuel says to Avud Bar'i, in Cain, if that be the case, there's no shibud written in the shtar, zil l'shlomo, go to peace, meaning lech l'shalom. In other words, you have no basis for your claim. If there's no shibud written in the shtar mecher, that's it. Sorry, buddy, you're out. Omalei, so Avua Bar'i turns to Shmuel, says, Vamar, who, you yourself, he says to him in third person, have already interpreted the halacha of the Chachamim in the case of shtar milva, that if achrayus was omitted from the shtar, nevertheless, the malva has recourse to collect from the karkos of the lova, from the shibudim of the lova, and achrayus tos soferhi. So even though the shtar of milva doesn't have any mention, there's no footnote about the shibud, nevertheless the malva collect from the lova's karkos, even if the lova sold the karkos, based on the principle of achrayus tos sofer. So why not apply the same logic here, Shmuel, to the case of a shtar mecher? A person's not going to buy a property and just throw his money to the wind. He wants to know that there's some security for his money. Amar lei, Shmuel answers him, hani mi l'vishtar alva. Where is it so that we don't even have to bother asking the malva and the lova for this agreement? We assume that the halva itself is based on the fact that the malva makes a conditional that he acquires the shibud in the property of the lova. Aval b'shtari mekach u'memkar. Right? So again, therefore, in shtari milva, if the achrayus and the shibud were left out of the shtar, we have to assume that it's a toz sofer. Aval b'shtari mekach u'memkar lo. But in the case of shtari mekach u'memkar, the lokech may want to pay money and buy the karka for the benefits that he gets, even on a temporary basis, up until the point in which the balchov, the mocher, comes and confiscates the karka. He gets benefits. You know, maybe a year went by, and in that year he produced a tremendous amount of produce. And therefore, Lo Ovid Inish de Zovid. Right? Ovid Inish de Zovin Ara Liyome. It's very possible that a person will purchase a karka, even though he realizes that his purchase is not going to be necessarily long lasting, and there's no absolute guarantee, and therefore the mocher, unless you heard from him explicitly that he's willing to be mishabed his karka for the benefit of the lokeach, we assume, and that's what the sofer is going to do, that there is no sheba. The mocher never committed himself to such a sheba in the chasim, and therefore we don't apply the principle of toes sofer. Omar Abaye, Reuven shemachar sodu l'shim vachrayus. In a case where Reuven, the seller, guaranteed to Shimon, the buyer, that he offers him achrayus, and he will reimburse Shimon in event that that karka is taken away from him, ubav al chov de Reuven v'katarif lei minei, the bal chov of Reuven, the so-called malve, who extended a loan to Reuven, now comes and confiscates the karka from Shimon based on the shibud, based on the achrayus that's built into this mechira. And now the question that Abai wants to address is, within the context of the Baal Chov coming into Beis Din and establishing his rights to collect this karka based on a shibud from Shimon, from the buyer, who has rights to stand in Beis Din on the defensive here to counter the claims of this Baal Chov? Maybe the chov was paid up. Maybe the chov never took place. Now, in the rules that govern Beis Din, a person can sue someone else, and that someone else has to bring all the proofs to as a defendant to protect his interests against the plaintiff, against the lawsuit. But somebody from the outside is not allowed to stand in front of the plaintiff and deal with him and bring evidence against his claim to Yenim, to somebody else. That's called Lav Al Dvarim Di Diat. Abai wants to point out that even though at this point the seller is out of the picture here, meaning the Din Udvarim here, the plaintiff and the defendant are none other than the Baal Chov of Reuven, and Shimon himself. Shimon is the one who's holding on to the karka, and the Baal Chov of Reuven, we'll call him Levi. Levi himself is claiming that there's a shibud that he owns in that karka as a Baal Chov. Comes along Abaye, and he says, no, even Reuven is allowed to stand up and bring rayos to counter the argument of the Baal Chov of Levi. Dina hu di ozil Reuven umishtoi dina vadei. Reuven has a right to come into Beis Din. And the Hebrew word is lihis dayen, which means to stand as a litigant and counter the arguments, the claims of the Baal Chov. And the Baal Chov has no right to say to him, v'lomotzi omerle, the Baal Chov has no right to say, counter argument, say to Reuven, get the heck out of here. You have no, who invited you into the court? La Baal Dvarim Di Diat. You're not my Baal Dvarim. You have no right to do so. And the Gemara now is going to explain, Abai is going to explain, why is that so? Why does Reuven have a right to come into Beis Din and put forth claims to counter the argument of the Baal Chov, where Shimon is at loss? You know, Shimon has not successfully countered the arguments of the Baal Chov, but Reuven can do so. Why is that so? Now, let's point out that Rabbi Kiveger has a tremendous issue with this sugya. Why is it that Abai has to work overtime to establish the rights of Reuven, of the Mocher, to stand here in Beis Din and counter the claims of the Baal Chov? And Abai bases himself on the following logic. The Omar Lay, what does Reuven the Mocher have a right to say to the Baal Chov when the Baal Chov says, get out of here, you're not my Baal Dvarim? Demafkis mine alei didei hadar. Because if you rip, if you successfully, you the Balchov, confiscate the karka of Shimon of the Lokeach, then now I, Reuven, insofar as I was meshabbing myself and my nechassim to guarantee this sale, I now am the firing line, and Shimon is going to come back and sue me for damages. And the Gemara goes even a step further and says, Ika diamri, according to one Lishna, another version, Afilu shalobach rais nami, diomer le lo niach li, de lehevi, le Shimon taromis alai. That the mocher still, even if he has no achrayis to back up the mecher, and there is no shivut on his nechassim, he can still claim I'm a bal dvarim, because you know what, this lokeach, meaning Shimon, has taromas, he has complaints, he has a gripe against me, he has a case against me. It's an erev yom kippur halacha, because I sold him a piece of karka, and the karka now has been taken away from the lokeach. He paid good money for the karka. Why did I sell him a karka, knowing full well that the Balchov is about to confiscate this karka from the lokeach, and he's out, and he has no recourse to get his money back because there was no achrayus here? So getting back to Rabbi Kivegi's kasha here, he says the following: what was the hava mina here, that the malve is out of the picture here? Sorry, that the lova is out of the picture here. The lova meaning the mocher. After all, this halacha of gvias karka from the lokeach is midin arvus. And the halacha is that you cannot claim from an arev, a guarantor, until first you go back to the lova. The malva has to first sue the lova for damages. I'm sorry, for payment of the loan. And only if and when he's victorious in that claim, in that suit against the lova, and the lova then turns his pockets inside out and there's no money, he has no nechassim, he has nothing to pay the malva, once the malva is proven and established that the lova owes him the money, then and only then does the malva have the right to claim and sue the arev. So basically, the Baal Chov here is the Mocher. It's not the Lokeach. The Lokeach doesn't owe any money to this Baal Chov, to the Levi. Shimon doesn't owe a penny to Levi. So how does Shimon come to Levi? Levi is basically a guarantor, based on the Shibud, for the Chov of Reuven, the Chov that Reuven owes to Levi. So now, let Levi first sue Reuven. That's going to be the process. That's going to be the step-by-step, shlav-by-shlav, once Levi, as Baal Chov, has established that Reuven is chayev to pay him money, then and only then does he have rights to go to the Orev, in this case to Shimon, who has a shibud on his nechassim. And in fact, there are those in the Achronim who want to say that the Mocher is considered a Baal Dovar, because the Taina is that he owes the money. In other words, did he pay back or did he not pay back? I mean, that claim has to go to Reuven, to the Mocher. He's the so-called Lova, and that's the way it has to go. Which is another, the Achronim are just, you know, sharpening the cash of Rebbe Kivega. Now Tosis, if you take a look, Divrei Maskil Dino here, the third Tosis on the page, he says the following. Let's ask a more naive question. My nafkimina, what difference does it make whether Reuven Tain is against the Baal Chov or Shimon Tain is against the Baal Chov? It's totally irrelevant. And why is that? Because we have a principle, an overriding principle, that appears all over all the Masechtas in the Zikin, and that's called Taininon Psach Picha Le'ilam, which means that if a person doesn't have the ability to know his rights and his power, if the defendant is not aware, and for natural good reasons, for justifiable, he's not aware of the claims that he could put forth in his own self-defense, then Beis Din will put forth those claims on his behalf. And we have a principle called Tainina L'Lekuchos, that any Taina that the Mocher could put forward the lokeach, if he doesn't know that taina, the Beis Din will put forward on his behalf. Furthermore, the Gemara in Masechta Makis in the famous Sugi V'lo V'tuvia establishes that if the malva is suing the lova, and krovim of the arev want to come in to testify, they are posuliatis. In other words, the arev is considered a baal dvarim as well. In any event, Tosus comes up with the following answer, which he rejects. He says, maybe there's an afkamina in the following scenario. Let's say Shimon exhausts his possibility of bringing proof against the baal chov of Reuven. And let's say, if in truth there are Edim out there who could testify against the Baal Chov, against Levi, to the effect that that Chov has already been paid, but Shimon, who's the defendant in this case, because Levi's coming to confiscate his what he claims is his rights to the property from Shimon, Shimon made a statement that I have no Edim. Therefore, there's halacha that the Baal Dovar has precluded himself irreversibly by virtue of his own admission of adducing, of invoking and subpoenaing these Edom to testify in his behalf. Reuven, on the other hand, the Malva, comes forward and he says, I want to subpoena those Edom. Or Tosus gives a case of what's called Gilgal Shvuah. Let's say, for example, this Balchov, meaning Levi, owed Reuven a shvua on a different dinu dvarim litigation that they had one against the other. Reuven now could be megalgel that shvua onto this case, even if, let's say, he has no rights to force Levi to take a shvua. Shimon has no gilgal shvua, but in the case that Reuven has a gilgal shvua, then Reuven could be megalgel his shvua and force Levi to take a shvua. Well, let's say there's an appeal to a higher court. Shimon, who's now on the firing line and his karka is about to be confiscated, has the ability, l'chora, to appeal the case to a higher court, to Beis Nagodol. But let's say Shimon doesn't have the wherewithal to get to the Beis Nagodol in Yerushalayim, but Reuven does. So Tosus says these are scenarios in which Abai wants to establish Reuven's ability and his rights to jump into this court case and force the hands of Levi and do a dinu dvarim with Levi. The Rashba has another nafkamina. Let's say Reuven designated a certain field as an apotiki for the purpose of the Gvias HaChov. If Shimon has to deal with Levi, then he doesn't have a right to say to him, go collect from the apotiki. Reuven has a right to say, deal with the apotiki, or to be misalik mos, and so forth and so on. So the various nafkimins, again, these are all fascinating issues. They don't really address Rabbi Kivega's question. Namely, that obviously the first claim here that Levi has to establish is vis-a-vis Reuven. And only then does he go to the Arif. So that question remains outstanding. The Omer Abaye, another statement of Abaye, Reuven Shemochar Sodel Shimon Shalobach Rayus. Reuven now sells karka without achrayus, and as we discussed before, achrayus has to be written in the shtar mecher, and there was no achrayus written in the shtar mecher. Is yotzo olav asikin? What happens if now the word gets out that there's a question as to whether or not Reuven was the legal bailim, the owner, the rightful owner of this karka that he sold him? Now, at this point, there are only orerim, meaning there are asikin, means Miloshen Rashi quotes from Breishis Chafav, his Ashku Imo, in the case of Roi Gror and Roi Yitzchak. In other words, there's some dealing going on here. We're not at the point where we can definitely say that the Mocher illegally sold this karka because he doesn't own the karka, but the Lokech is getting very nervous based on the, you know, the rumor that's circulating, or the fact that there are those who are claiming that this karka is theirs and it doesn't belong to the Mocher. The Lokech, in a word, wants to back out of this deal. And can he do so or not? Now Rashi, later on in this sugya, is going to tell us that the case is that the Lokech has not yet paid the Mos. He hasn't given over the money to the Mocher. And that's what Abai is going to establish, that as long as the Maisa Kinyan, the Maisa Chazok, hasn't been done, hasn't been implemented, and the Lokech hasn't made an absolute Kinyan, he can back out of the deal. And there's nothing to force him, the Lokech, to pay and go through with the deal. However, Rashi says that if he had paid for the karka, even if he didn't make the chazaka, then he was kona the karka, and that finalized the clinches the kinyan with Mos. Tosfos has a problem with this Rashi, because if Rashi's telling us that the Mos have not yet been delivered in this case, then what's the chiddush of Abai? Pshita that he could be chozer bo. You've got to tell me that the chiddush here is that even though he paid the Mos, nevertheless he can back out of the deal. Tosus then admits that Rashi's right. How can he back out of the deal if he paid the Mos? So mimarav shachir. If he didn't pay the Mos, then Pshita could back out of the deal. Tosfos says he doesn't even get a Mishapara. Okay, that's a separate discussion. But if he did pay the Mos, then the Kinyan was clinched regardless of whether he made the Chazaka. So Tosfos wants to suggest that he didn't pay the Mos, as Rashi says, but there was some sort of Kinyan Chalipin, and Lokech wants to be Chozer Bo because of the Orim who are tining that this Mekach is a Mekach Toz, that the Mocher had no right to sell it. And now, despite the Kinyan Chalipin, the Kinyan Chalipin is a kind of conditional Kinyan. And Abai wants to suggest and establish that if the Lokech has not yet done a Chazaka, implemented a Chazaka on this Karka, he hasn't gone around the borders to check it out, then as far as Kinyan Chalipin, there's no smichus das. He hasn't had a complete decision to clinch this Kinyan with Chalipin. Once, however, he did the chazaka, then there's a gemiris das, there's an absolute complete decision and agreement on the part of Lokeach that this mechira is final. So this is what Abai wants to say. If ad shelo hichzik ba, if Lokech hasn't yet done a kinyan chazaka on the karka, then he has rights to back out of the deal, and the deal is completely invalid, even though again it was a kinyan chalipin according to Tosfos in the name of the Riva. But once he's made the kinyan chalipin, then even if there's a rumor going around that the karka is stolen and that the mocher illegally sold him stolen karka, nevertheless, once the lokech has implemented his chazaka, then he cannot back out of the deal. The deal is binding. But if he hasn't done the chazaka, yochel, we're here on the top of Yudal and Beis, yochel lachzer, but lokech could back out of the deal. However, Misha Hichzik Bo Lokeach, Eina Yochel Lachzer Bo. Why? Di Omer Le, the Mocher says Lokeach, Chaisa de Kitri, Savris Vikibalt. Once you've done this Chazaka, you checked out the Karka, you decided that you have full agreement to the Karka, you realize very well that this Karka is like a Sak Molek Sharim. It's like a bag, you don't know what's in the bag. You decided to buy this jack-in-the-box, meaning that was your decision. You didn't do your due diligence. You could have checked it out further and find out if there's Orim or not, you assumed, let me get into this. And even though there's an element of risk, I'm going to buy the karka. The Gemara now wants to know, at what point in time do you assume that the lokeach checked out the karka and made an absolute decision, an ironclad decision that he wants his kinyan to be chal, let's say his kinyan chlipin to be chal? Is the Gemara answers, michi daish ametzre, when the lokeach does some sort of an action, a pu'ula, ma'isa, to be metaken, in this case the mitzri means the gvulos, the boundaries, the outer boundaries of the field. Let's say they used to have on the outer boundaries mitzorim. Mitzorim means some sort of markers or fences that would indicate that this is the outer bounds of the karka. And he went ahead, this lokeach, and he established those mitzorim. Let's say he lifted them up, put them down. The Rashbam says in Bava Basra, Magbia HaMetzar Vidash HaKarka. What he does is, he lifts up the Metzar, this marker that establishes the boundary, and he pounds down the Karka. He makes a Tikkun to make sure that he's Mechazek, he strengthens the Metzar. That's a full-fledged Kinyan Chazaka. Tosfos understands, and the Rosh, that it's a slightly different mitzvah. What he does is he takes a little trip around the Gvulos HaSoda, he gets into his golf cart and he drives around the outer bounds of the karka to see what needs, maybe there's certain tikkunim, certain improvements that he has to make. Ika diamri afilu biachrayus nami, even according to the second Lishna, if the mechira was done with achrayus, which means that there's a shibud on the part of the mocher to back up this mecher nami, even in such a case, the lokeach is not able to be chozer bo once he did the tikkun on the mitzorim. He did his full fledged chazaka, and he doesn't have a right to say to the mocher that I want out of this. Of this deal, of this mecher, and his claim is, why should I fork over the money? Again, as we said at great length, we spoke about this, Rashi Tosei, he hasn't yet paid the money to Lokeach. So Lokeach is saying, why do I have to go back and claim my achrayus that's written in the shtar? I'm just going to hold on to this money. The Omer Lei, no, the mocher still has rights to say to Lokeach, achve tirpach. It means that when there's a claim against the lokeach that the field belongs to so-and-so, and then the mocher had no right to sell it, that claim has to come in front of Beis Din. Those ma'arim who claim ownership of the karka have to show up in Beis Din. And if they successfully prove that the karka is theirs, and this mecher is batel, then Beis Din will write a special document, a special shtar that's called a shtar tirpach, and the mocher has a right to say to lokeach, up until the moment that you produce that shtar tirpach that guarantees by virtue of a psak bezdin that you have rights to come back to me with a tfiyah because the ma'orim are taking your karka away, until that point you are bound, again, because you did this full-fledged chazaka, to pay me for the sale. If you come to me with a shtar tirpach, then ashalim lecha. That's when I'll pay you. But up until that point, that achrayis that's written in the shtar, says the mocher to lokech, is not relevant. And after all, there's an error going out, the rumors going out, and claims and counterclaims and so forth and so on, but that hasn't gone through the process of Beis Din. That hasn't been established. And therefore, I don't want to let you off the hook here. You're still bound to this kinyan to pay me the most. And what happens later on, we'll deal with that later on. Okay, Rabbosai, Birtz Hashem, we'll continue a little bit later on. We want to take a break now here on Daf Yudalid Omid Beis.